What if you could test your blood in your own home, but just a drop?
Nu på Disney Plus.
This machine is going to change the world.
The Dropout. En helt ny original serie.
Anybody who doubts my company, doubts me.
Inspireret af en sand historie.
We have to stop her.
You don't understand the business.
And you don't understand the science.
The Dropout. Stream alle episoder nu. Eksklusivt på Disney Plus. 79 kroner om måneden. Abonnement kræves. Vilkår gælder.
It was another Black Friday in WWE, this time for the NXT brand. 10 talents released today. The main roster was unscathed for the time being. Of course, as we all know, that could very well change. As far as tonight is concerned, the only thing live is this stream. We had two taped shows tonight. We had one from WWE. We had one from AEW after weeks, at least 2 weeks officially, but they've been teasing this for a while now. After weeks of teasing and then announcing and promoting winner take all unification for the Raw tag team titles and the SmackDown tag team titles, RK-Bro against the Usos. We got the announcement tonight that the match has been canceled. Been changed in favor of a six-man tag that will now headline WrestleMania Backlash, which is a little over a week away. And instead, it will be the Bloodline. Roman Reigns will be joining with his cousins, the Usos, to take on Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton, and Matt Riddle. That is going to be the main event of the next pay-per-view. Now, they still have one more week to go. They've already announced that the Bloodline is going to be on Raw Monday night. We have Raw on Monday. We have SmackDown next Friday. Two more shows. They could add in the winner-take-all stipulation. They should add in the winner-take-all stipulation. Doesn't mean they will. So there is still time for them to make an announcement next week for Adam Pearce to come out and say, we're going to have this six-man tag that Paul Heyman said tonight that he wanted to have, but I just heard from the board of directors, I just got a text message on my phone. That's all Adam Pearce ever does when we see him or Sonya Deville on TV. It's all they're doing. They're on their phones. Everybody's on their phones today. I always wonder, well, who exactly are they texting? Who are they talking to on the phone in the middle of this live television show? They're supposed to be paying attention to what's going on in the building. They shouldn't be on the phone having conversations during those 2 hours or 3 hours. Who are they texting or sexting? Maybe I don't want to know. Don't you ever wonder? So there is still time for them to make that change. But as of right now, the unification is off. Now, what that does is it gets them out of giving away the first title match, one-on-one between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre, which is just insane to think that they would announce the match on 1 week build. So that is one potential positive of them doing a six-man tag instead of a singles match. When you really stop and think about this whole thing and the way things played out here on the show tonight, and you'll hear about it when I talk about the contract signing segment and what Roman Reigns did in that segment, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And I will explain why it doesn't make any sense. But it wouldn't be a WWE show if it did. It's kind of on brand for them. On Rampage, Samoa Joe retained his Ring of Honor TV title. And that was his first title defense in the main event tonight. He went one-on-one with Trent Barretta on the show. Darby Allin qualified for the Owen Hart Cup with a win over Swerve Strickland, which sets up a very interesting potential match in that tournament. And I will tell you what that match is. This is your SmackDown and Rampage review, recap, rewind, whatever word you want to use for it. For Friday night, April 29th, 2022, the final stream for the month of April. We are closing things out with a bang because you are all here. I am the Solemn Monster. You know, The Miz showed up at the NFL draft tonight. I'm sure some of you have been flipping back and forth all evening long, or you weren't watching wrestling at all. You're just tuned in to find out what the hell happened on these shows. Because you were watching, you were tuned in, you were focused on the NFL draft. And they had The Miz make an appearance on stage. I think he may have announced one of the draft picks. I didn't see the whole thing, but Miz did come out on that draft show tonight, and he did say, he did make a comment, made a guarantee, made a promise, said that the Cleveland Browns, he guaranteed that the Cleveland Browns would win the Super Bowl next year. Quite the comedian is Mr. Mizanin. That guy, man, he's got a career in stand-up comedy ahead of him. Does the Miz. You know what else happened tonight? More importantly, when it comes to a real team, the Mets pitched only their second no-hitter in franchise history. And I think the 10-year anniversary of the first one, I think, is not too far off. But they blanked out the Phillies. That's right, fuck the Phils. Mets win. Now, it took them five pitchers to do it. It was a combined no-hitter. It was not one, you know, pitcher, which would be more impressive. But nonetheless, a fine victory tonight. I'm sad I missed the game. I was watching all this wrestling stuff, and I didn't get to see it live, but congratulations to my Mets. A record-setting win. A franchise win tonight that will be remembered for many years to come. Super chats are open. I've thrown a few new ones in there for you. You might see them pop up. Matthew says the Browns are good. Now, the Browns may be good. I'm not saying the Browns are bad. I'm not saying the Browns aren't good. I'm just saying the Browns aren't going to win the Super Bowl next year. That's all. It's a big difference there. Let's get into, very briefly here, I'm not going to get too deep into the weeds on this because I'm going to have a lot more to say about this on episode 754 this Sunday. This will probably be the top story on the podcast on Sunday. But Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful.com reported that NXT releases were coming down. He put a tweet out earlier this afternoon saying NXT releases are incoming. And shortly thereafter came the announcement that 10 names cut that we know of, 10 names cut from NXT in terms of talent today. They just waited an extra 2 weeks, right? What have I been saying? April 15th, post-WrestleMania cuts. We've seen this the past 2 years now, 3 years, I think. April 15th was 2 years ago, two weeks ago today. All they did was just push this back and delay things by 2 weeks. We got the post-WrestleMania cuts, the first wave, today instead of 2 weeks ago. 10 names in total, and probably the biggest among them being Dakota Kai, who has been a part of the NXT women's roster now for a number of years. Was never the NXT Women's Champion, but nonetheless, she was a tag team champion. And again, I don't recall exactly what the number is, but she's been there for, she's probably been there for what, 5 years now? 4 or 5 years, somewhere in that range? She's been there for a while. Dakota Kai is no longer there. Malcolm Bivens of Diamond Mine gone, although Sapp said that the company had wanted him, they had approached him a couple of months ago about re-signing, and he made it very clear to them that he was not going to, that he was not interested in doing so. That may have also been the case with Dakota Kai. I heard that credited to Fightful. I, offhand, when I checked, I didn't see that. I saw that for Bivens, but I did not see that on the Fightful website as far as Dakota Kai. It may well be true that she also told them she wasn't going to re-sign, and they said, well, if that's the case, then we're just going to let you go. But I don't have that confirmed. Dexter Lumis, also on the list. Persia Parada, who apparently just bought a house in the last few weeks. Talk about bad timing. Although that WWE money may have helped her buy the house. But now she has a new house and she has no job. That's never an ideal situation to be in. Although realistically, how much money could she have been making in NXT? Right? She wasn't making that main roster money. Either way, the timing is shit for her. Harlan, which would explain why we have not seen him on television the last 2 weeks with Joe Gacy. Joe Gacy has been doing all this voodoo stuff and druids and all this complete fucking nonsense on these last few NXT shows. No Harlan. Conspicuous by his absence, now we know why. Harlan is no more. Harlan is no longer a member of the NXT roster. Draco Anthony, who's made a handful of appearances on television. I think his last one was a loss 2 weeks ago to Zion Quinn. The rest of these names, honestly, I've never heard of these people before. Sanjana George, Mila Milani, Raylan Devine, and Paige Prinzavalli, who is a referee there named Blair Baldwin, all released today by WWE. This was said to be a John Laurinaitis decision. And the reason given was budget cuts. Say it with me now. Budget cuts. One NXT official per Fightful that contacted the website expressed frustration that several angles, acts, and stories were affected by the cuts with little to no notice or preparation for the incoming news. Well, that's par for the course. So basically, you had people like Persia Parada and others and Dexter Lumis and people who were involved in angles and storylines on TV. Nobody was given a heads up. And they probably went on Twitter or they went on Fightful and they saw the news that way, just like everybody else did. And now they'll have to figure things out. They'll have to figure things out, I guess. Not really all that different probably than the way television usually works in WWE, with things getting rewritten all the time and things changing, maybe more so on the main roster. But there have been a lot of developmental cuts, NXT cuts over the last several months. And so, again, this is something that they're just going to have to get used to, because it ain't the first time, and I can tell you it probably won't be the last time that we hear about something like this. So, again, I will have more thoughts on some of the specific releases, some people like Dakota Kai and Malcolm Bivens and Harland and whatnot on Sunday. Maybe we'll get some more information between now and then as well. Hopefully no more cuts. But I will cover this and talk more about this on the podcast on Sunday. That'll be episode 754. Let's get into SmackDown. SmackDown opened with a steel cage match. It was Drew McIntyre one-on-one against Sami Zayn. These two have been feuding on television now for several weeks. Zayn has run away from McIntyre in each of their first two matches, including a lumberjack match. Somehow in a lumberjack match, he managed to escape and run off into the crowd. I made the comment last week when I was talking about SmackDown. Adam Pearce comes out last week after Sami somehow managed to escape into the crowd in that lumberjack match. And instead of ordering him to come back down to the ring or face a lengthy fine and suspension, he says, "Oh, you got one over on me, Sami, but next week I'm going to put you in a cage." And I said last week, I go, "Look, just send the guy back down to the ring. You won't even have to go through all this stuff." But he wanted him in a cage, so we got a steel cage match here. Sami was hesitating, not very eager to climb into the cage. Wasted no time, tried to climb out immediately. McIntyre pulled him back inside, was throwing Zayn into the side of the cage. Fans broke into a one more time chant, and McIntyre threw Zayn into the cage yet again. So he threw him into the cage for a third time. And the third time, McIntyre, or Zayn rather, he grabs the cage, he starts to climb out again. And McIntyre and Zayn, they fought to the top of the cage in the corner. Zayn drove McIntyre's head into the cage, hit a sunset powerbomb. After a break, Sami was in control, connected with the Huluva kick, tried to escape again. McIntyre threw him into the cage a few times, followed that up with a belly-to-belly suplex. He set up for the Claymore, but Zayn tried to climb out of the cage yet again, trying to escape the cage. They fought on top until Zayn knocked down McIntyre, and it looked like Zayn might have the match won. I mean, come on, we knew he didn't, but they wanted you to believe that he did. And Sami got his body over the cage. All he had to do was drop down. But Drew got up there, and he grabbed him by the hair, and he was kind of pulling him back over, and McIntyre reached over and he suplexed Sami, whose body was hanging over the top of the cage, and he suplexed him all the way down to the mat. Did a kip up, followed that up with the Claymore kick for the win. A very basic cage match. I mean, it was a cage match. What more can I say? You know, it was fine. It was fine. If you watch this match, though, and this would be an interesting experiment here for anybody who's absolutely bored this weekend and has nothing better to do with their life. You watch this match back with a blindfold on. It doesn't even have to be a blindfold. You've got two eye patches. You put one here, you put one there. If you've got a fucking towel, wrap it around your head or a blanket or something, or, you know, whatever. Some, you know, a cloth with fucking chloroform. Wrap it around your eyes, okay? Cover your eyes. And I want you to watch this match. You would think that this crowd, this was like fucking Hogan and Rock in the Sky Dome in Toronto. Just by listening to the crowd, you're not going to see anything, but just by listening to the audience, you would think that the people were into every single thing and Drew McIntyre was just the biggest babyface on planet Earth watching this match. Now, if you go back and you watch the match, or even if you watch it and turn down the volume, it tells a very different story. What you will find when you would look out into the crowd are people largely just sitting there motionless, not really seeming to give much of a shit about what they are watching. This was the story of the entire night. I mean, this is becoming a common theme on WWE shows in general, which is not to say that AEW or other promotions don't or haven't in the past used crowd sweetening. It's not a new phenomenon, but I keep talking about this. It's just increasingly noticeable. Maybe it's just that they're running sometimes in front of crowds with matches and storylines that, you know, by God, they're just not connecting. And the people just don't care enough to really make all that much noise. And so WWE has had to resort to ratcheting up all of the artificial sound to the point where it doesn't jive with what we're seeing on TV, and it just makes it so goofy to watch. They don't really realize that when they jack the volume up, it's going up way too high. I mean, they did something on TV the other night with Bobby Lashley and Omos. I think it was right before the arm wrestling contest. Somebody hit a button because they had, I think, I'm pretty sure it was that segment. And they had made their entrances, right? And then the music stopped and the crowd was kind of quiet. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the crowd was like, you heard like the crowd noise, like rose. And then it quickly stopped. Somebody hit the button or they hit the slider on the console and down it went. It sounded ridiculous. These are trained professionals who work under Kevin Dunn in this truck. Kevin Dunn's been doing this for 1,000 years. These people, they're very talented people. It's a very stressful job to be sitting there live television, right? You got to be doing things. You got to be. This is such a simple thing. This shouldn't be happening. It's embarrassing when stuff like that happens. So anyway, interesting experiment if you ever want to try that. Watch with your eyes closed and watch with the sound down. You get two very different experiences. But this was the second SmackDown of the night, to be fair. They taped two SmackDowns in one night last week. I couldn't stomach one SmackDown last week. These poor people, I think they were in Albany, had to sit in that building through two SmackDowns, 4 hours of this shit. I don't blame the fans at all. Surprised they were able to stay awake for it. Speaking of staying awake, Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin was out next for Happy Talk. Yay! It's Happy Talk, everybody. Man, they should have put that in 2K22. They should have put Happy Talk in story mode, My Rise mode. Solo Monster could be a guest on Happy Talk. My life would be complete. Baron Corbin is in the ring without Madcap Moss. Corbin ran him down. Again, Madcap got an amazingly fake reaction here from the crowd in this segment when his name got brought up. Corbin says the only thing Moss did that was ever funny was thinking that he could beat Baron Corbin. And he claimed that Moss owes his Andre the Giant budget cuts battle royal victory to him. The trophy should belong to him. He goes, tonight he's going to destroy the Andre trophy. Corbin asked for a sledgehammer so he could destroy it. Two men in coveralls carried the trophy down to the ring. I thought maybe it was going to be like that time that Vince McMahon wrestled God, and they would shine a spotlight and put the trophy on some kind of like a sliding platform and just, without anybody around, to just kind of slide the trophy slowly, making it look as if the trophy was walking down to the ring. They didn't do that. They had two people in overalls or coveralls, whatever it was, carried the trophy down to the ring. Of course, one of the guys in the outfit revealed himself to be Madcap Moss, and he had a sledgehammer in hand. He took a swing at Baron Corbin. Sadly, though, Corbin ducked. They brawled for a bit. Moss sent Corbin out to the floor, and then he celebrated with his trophy. Amazing television. Incredible. I give it all the stars on the scale. All the stars on the Meltzer scale and all the stars in the sky I give to this wonderful segment here. We had Ricochet one-on-one with Shanky for the Intercontinental Championship. The words Shanky and Intercontinental Championship should not be in the same sentence. Thankfully, they kept this short. Ricochet bumped around like a madman. I mean, Ricochet had his working boots on tonight. He was bumping around for this guy. This guy could be like a brick wall just standing there. Ricochet was bumping off him like a rubber ball. Ricochet headed up top at one point. Jinder Mahal tripped him up while Shanky had the referee distracted. Shanky had Ricochet up for Wade Barrett's old wasteland finisher that he was about to deliver. Ricochet, though, slipped out behind him. Folded Shanky up for the surprise pin to retain the championship. You know, Shanky doesn't... Shanky, he doesn't move around like he's immobile. He's not like a stiff, right? There's some big guys who can't do anything. Kali, he was a working stiff. He couldn't do a damn thing. Shanky is not that, right? He can move around, he could do certain basic things, but he's not seasoned. He's just not that good. He's not somebody who, with limited television time for so many people, is somebody that they should be focusing on right now as someone who is wrestling for a championship. If Shanky is going to be part of a group, if he's going to be a manager, a bodyguard in the background in some way, I mean, that's one role for him, although he's got to, at some point, he's got to work, but he's just not that good. But he's at least somewhat mobile, you know, moving around in the ring. After the match, Jinder yelled at Shanky for losing. Shanky heard enough and told him no, and then he turned around and he walked away. So, I gotta tell you guys, I don't know if you feel the same way that I do. Undertaker, there he is on the screen. He's obviously in a happy mood. He looks a little baked. Thank you, Brandon, for the 420 super chat. But I gotta tell you, I'm a little down. You know, first we had Corbin and Madcap. Now here we have Jinder and Shanky might be breaking up. Aaron Rodgers just broke up with his girlfriend. I don't think my heart can take much more of this. I don't know how much more of this I can take. Devastated. Absolutely. I'm tearing up. Guys, look, I'm tearing up. Oh, wait. This is just dirt. We had Rodriguez. I'm gonna confuse the two for a while. Raquel Rodriguez was in the back being interviewed by Kayla Braxton. She was at the gorilla position being interviewed. Are you nervous? Do you got the butterflies in your stomach? The mariposas? Are they in your stomach here as you are heading into your in-ring SmackDown debut? And Raquel Gonzalez, holy shit. Somebody told this woman to smile because she could not stop smiling. She could not stop smiling. She was the happiest girl in the entire world throughout this entire promo. So cheesy. I'm already hoping at least do a heel turn. She only first made her in-ring debut tonight. I'm already begging for a heel turn. Raquel was out next against her opponent, Kat Cardoza. Cardoza actually got some offense in here in this match. Raquel, though, finished her off in about 2 minutes with the Chingona bomb. After the match, we got a quick backstage vignette with Ludwig Kaiser standing behind Gunther as they played their music in the background. And Ludwig, Marcel, call him whatever you want, Marcel Marceau, he starts talking about how Gunther is the embodiment of greatness. And then we heard briefly from Gunther, who said respect will be taken by the ring general. And then they zoomed in on him as he made that big face. His chin took up about, you know, 3/4 of the screen. He did the old Sergeant Slaughter thing with the chin up. You know, I can't do it. I don't have I don't have the Sergeant Slaughter chin, so I can't do it. But, you know, I can't do it. But you know what I mean, right? So they zoomed in on his face, and that was the end of that segment. A fine segment. We had a contract signing for the winner-take-all Unification Tag Team Championship match. At WrestleMania Backlash, Randy Orton and Matt Riddle came out. The Usos came out. Adam Pearce is in the ring 2 weeks in a row now of contract signings. Jimmy Uso said they had nothing to prove. He said the entire world knows that you're the twos and we the ones. And Jimmy said after WrestleMania Backlash, they would need bigger luggage and RK-Bro would have to acknowledge them. Riddle said that he couldn't tell the Usos apart. Asked Adam Pearce if one of them could get some tattoos or maybe a mustache. Orton said that he's never had trouble telling the Usos apart. He said the one on the right is the right-hand man and the one on the left is a little bitch. Uh-oh. He said the fighting word. He said the B-word. Jimmy jumped across the table. He just punched Orton, jumped across the table. And a big brawl broke out. All of a sudden, Roman Reigns' music starts playing. And they did the whole thing, too. The whole CGI graphic. We have to wait for the guy, you know, the Roman Reigns CGI graphic to go, rah! Right? And then there's Roman, and Paul Heyman is behind him, and Roman is taking his time coming down to the ring. And he walks down to the ring. Orton and Riddle, they're ready for him, but they got their backs turned. And the Usos attacked them from behind. They laid out Riddle with the 1D, then picked him up for Roman Reigns, who held up the contract, which was never signed, by the way, because they started fighting before anybody had a chance to put their signature on the contract. So Roman picks up the contract, and he rips it up. And then he takes the pieces of the contract, and he shoves it in Riddle's mouth, and he starts, you know, pounding on this guy. All of a sudden, we hear Drew McIntyre's music. So back out he comes after his cage match victory at the beginning of the show. He comes out, and he quickly dispatches the Usos, has a stare down with Roman Reigns. The two of them trade blows. Drew threw him across the ring with a belly-to-belly overhead suplex, and the Bloodline retreated to end the segment. I don't know how many of you saw that fan cam footage that was floating around on social media last week. When they taped the second show, somebody in the audience that night posted video from the contract signing segment of the fight between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. And, you know, it was so sad to watch. Clearly, many fans had left the building by that point because it was getting late and they were taping two shows. Some people were like, I got to go home, right? They have work the next day, or, you know, if they're a normal human being, they can't possibly tolerate two SmackDowns back to back. So they left. So you have all these empty seats, but the people who were still there, right? This is the first time that Drew and Roman are coming to blows since probably their Survivor Series match a couple of years ago. And, or maybe, I guess it wasn't a couple, right? It was probably a little over a year ago at this point, year and a half. But, you know, they've kept them apart. This is supposed to be a big confrontation, right? First time, here we go, Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre. And they're throwing punches, and there's no reaction. Nobody is screaming and jumping or standing up. Everyone's just sitting there. They could not care any less. And again, it was late, it was the second taping, I'm sure that played a role, but even still, these are supposed to be your two biggest stars in the entire company. Or two of your biggest, I mean, Roman is the biggest. Drew is supposed to be one of the biggest, and it was just sad. Nobody cared. And they tried as much as they could to avoid any wide shots. You didn't get any kind of wide crowd shot or anything during this segment because they probably didn't want to show all the empty seats, but nobody was reacting to this. It's very sad to see. So, as I said, the contract was never actually signed. That's the first thing I noticed. when I saw that the contract wasn't signed and they started fighting, I thought, how are they going to try to weasel out of this match? And then Roman came out, right? And we saw what Roman did here. He ripped it up. And at that point, I'm thinking, okay, maybe we're going to get a six-man tag at the pay-per-view. Maybe it's going to be winner-take-all, but their way around doing Drew and Roman one-on-one this quickly is to just insert them into that match and create a six-man tag match. We didn't have to wait very long to wonder and think, because after a break, they come back, and Paul Heyman is in the back in Adam Pearce's office, and he floats the idea of changing the match at Backlash to, what else? A six-man tag. Roman Reigns and the Usos, right? The Bloodline against RK-Bro and Drew McIntyre. No mention of titles, no mention of unification, no mention of winner take all, just a straight up six-man tag team match in the main event of the next pay-per-view. As if we don't get these on TV every week. Roman and the Bloodline against RK-Bro and Drew McIntyre. So Roman and the Bloodline. They are the Bloodline. All three make up the Bloodline. Adam Pearce said he already had advertised a unification match with the titles on the line. He can't just change the match. Heyman threatened to go to the board of directors and said not only can he make the match, he goes, you will make the match. And Heyman walked off. Later in the show, Michael Cole had breaking news. It is official. At WrestleMania Backlash, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, it will be Roman Reigns and the Usos taking on Drew McIntyre and RK-Bro. The unification match, I guess, at Backlash is canceled. As of this moment, and it could change, and it should change, but as of this moment, there is no unification match anymore. The unification match has flown away. It is now just a straight six-man tag team match at the pay-per-view. I do believe that there's got to be some kind of a stipulation announced on television next week. They've got two more shows left. There has to be some stipulation. Winner take all is the stipulation that makes the most sense. You do winner take all. You have the Usos win the Raw tag team titles. You unify those titles. The Bloodline now has all the gold. And you have one set of tag team champions who can float from show to show for the time being. We all know these titles, even if they get unified, like the WWE and the Universal titles, they're not going to stay unified for very long. How many months? I don't know, but it won't be for that long. Same with the tag team titles. Even if they unify them, it's just a temporary thing. But the tag team division is so weak and pathetic in this company right now, there is no need to have two tag team champions. You can have the Usos show up on SmackDown. You can have the Usos show up on Raw. And eventually, the titles will be de-unified. But it's why I don't mind there being a unification right now. The division is so weak. There really should just be one tag team division. If they had a plethora of strong tag teams the way that AEW has in their company right now, say what you want about AEW. I've always given praise to their tag team division. Even if you don't like AEW, you're a fool if you can't sit there and admit they got a lot of really good tag teams in AEW. They probably have the best tag team division of any company in the world right now. Certainly in this country. I mean, that's just a fact. Just look at the number of teams and then you look at the quality of those teams. It's not a point that can be debated or argued. If WWE had a division like that, even half of what that is, then I wouldn't have a problem with having two sets of tag team titles, because we could be getting some kick-ass matches and programs for championships on both shows. Just not the case. They have a handful, that's it. So I'm in the camp of, I don't mind unification. I was in favor of unification. The fact that they have now canceled the unification, as of this moment, I think is the wrong move to make. And I was sad to hear that, but on the other hand, it is way too soon to be giving away the first title match between Roman Reigns and Drew McIntyre with 1 week built. Think about it. You've got one SmackDown left before Backlash. Backlash being a nothing show. It's fucking Backlash. You've got 1 week to promote a Roman Reigns Drew McIntyre championship match? It's ludicrous. This gets them out of having to do a singles match. Putting them in a six-man tag, that's the way to go. But how long are they going to be able to hold off? They have Hell in a Cell coming up in June. Money in the Bank is at the beginning of July. SummerSlam isn't until the end of July. And the UK Stadium show, I mean, that's way off into the distance. Which has a name now, by the way. It has a name and a logo. Clash at the Castle. I actually like that name. Clash at the Castle. First, I wasn't sure if they were, if this was a pay-per-view being hosted in Kevin Castle's backyard. Shout out to Kevin Castle. But it is a clash at the cat. I don't think Kevin Castle has ever been in the UK. I don't believe. Maybe one day in the past, he made a trip over to London and saw all the sights and, you know, the guards with the furry hats and all that. I don't know. I don't know his life story. But Clash at the Castle, that is the name of the pay-per-view on September 3rd. So, I like the fact that they at least now have a reason not to do the match so quickly, but they should still make this six-man tag winner take all. Have Roman put his championship on the line. Have the Usos put their belts on the line. RK-Bro put their belts on the line. The heels get the win. They unify the titles. And you at least get one more month before you go to Droman. Drew and Roman. Boy, if you fuse them together, there's a Photoshop for you. What does Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns look like if you kind of... I mean, the hair would be the same, but I wonder how different the face would look. Like Brundlefly. Put them in the machine. They come out. You see what they look like. But I said at the beginning of the stream, I said, something doesn't make any sense about this. And the point that I was making is that in this segment, when Roman Reigns ripped up the contract and stuffed it in Matt Riddle's mouth. Okay? Think about this. On SmackDown a few weeks ago, it was Roman Reigns who told the Usos, I want you to go to Raw. I'm sending you to Raw. I want you to unify those Raw tag team titles with your SmackDown tag team titles. Bring me the titles. As I did at WrestleMania, you will do the same. It was his idea. So why is Roman Reigns now coming out here and ripping up the contract and saying, no, no, we're not going to do unification? This doesn't make any sense. It was his idea to begin with. So even the way they went about doing this didn't make any sense. It was stupid. Help me make sense of this. It's a very easily rectifiable situation on TV next week. They can still make the match winner take all. Then at least you have stakes on the pay-per-view. We had Naomi one-on-one with Shayna Baszler. A little preview of their upcoming women's tag team title match. We were told tonight, we did get the news, that Natty and Shayna will challenge Naomi and Sasha for the belts in 2 weeks on TV. Drew Gulak served as the timekeeper for the match, this after serving as a backstage interviewer a few weeks ago, and then being a lackey, an assistant for Adam Pearce. He failed miserably in those roles, evidently, and so now he is a timekeeper. Next week, he might be sweeping floors in the arena. Maybe that'll be his next job. They went 2.5 minutes. Baszler tried for the Kirifuda clutch. Naomi slipped out, rolled her up for the win. After the match, Natty attacked Naomi. Sasha made the save. She got Banks in the sharpshooter while Baszler stomped on Naomi's arm. She had the arm bent with the elbow kind of pointed up and then stomped on it. Wanted you to, you know, make it feel like, oh, she broke her arm. She didn't. But, you know, they always talk about, oh, my goodness. Pat McAfee was like, oh, it's so gruesome. I can't watch. I can't see. She does this in every match. Nobody's ever had their arm broken by her in any of these matches. And it's the most gruesome thing in the world. Unless I see bone popping out of the skin, it ain't that bad. But now Naomi is going to be selling an arm, well, for at least 1 week, she'll be selling an arm injury. In 2 weeks, I'm sure she will have forgotten about the entire thing. Michael Cole. Oh, boy. Michael Cole recapped the great adventures of Butch. We got the footage of Butch being pinned by Xavier Woods with the Backwoods. Butch then took off into the crowd. He has not been seen since. The dog got off his leash, and now they can't find him. The dog ran away. Nobody knows what happened to Butch. This is a real storyline on WWE television. To the point where there was a gimmick on social media. All the WWE social media accounts. I must have missed this. But I guess this week there was a social media campaign with the hashtag Where's Butch? And they showed us a series of photoshops of Butch spotted in various locations. Remember The Undertaker back in 94? And everybody thought they saw The Undertaker when The Undertaker was missing for months. And the fire station people, that's what I call them. They're not firefighters. They're fire station people. They claim they saw The Undertaker walk by one day, the guy at the deli, behind the deli counter. He was chopping up ham, and he looked up one day, and he saw The Undertaker. And some woman at the park thought that she saw The Undertaker, you know, doing hopscotch or whatever. Where is Butch? And they showed these different images, including Butch at Coachella. They had him, photoshopped in there. Nobody knows where Butch is. Well, I have some good news. This is breaking news. You won't hear this anywhere else on any other show, any other stream, any other podcast. You get the news right here, right now. Hear from yours truly on the Sound Off stream. We have found Butch. I have found Butch. Butch has been spotted. I want to put the image on your screen. There he is, folks. Butch has been found. We know where Butch ran off to. There it is. AEW Dynamite. His feet couldn't carry him fast enough. Pete Dunne ran right into the fucking Dynamite arena. Where are they next week? I don't even know where Dynamite is next week. Wherever Dynamite is, there he is. There's Butch. Look how happy he looked. I think he was born with that look on his face. So backstage, Sheamus and Ridge Holland were talking about the fact that they had lost Butch. And they had to find him. And they're putting signs up all over the place. But now they're getting ready to go out because Ridge Holland has a match. Get that out of here. Ridge Holland has a match coming up next with Xavier Woods. And now they have Ridge on TV. He's taking credit for putting Big E, breaking his neck and putting him out of action. It's like Owen Hart, when he dropped Austin on his head and he had t-shirts made up that says Owen 316 says, I just broke your neck. It's the same thing. So out comes Ridge Holland for a match with Xavier Woods. Holland whipped Woods into the corner, but he missed the tackle and he went shoulder first into the ring post. Woods followed up with a tornado DDT off the apron. Holland slowed things down with a chin lock, broke free, did Woods. Holland hit a spine buster for a near fall. Ridge went for a powerbomb, but Woods escaped and caught Holland with the backwoods for the win. After the match, Sheamus was very upset that Holland lost. He challenged Kofi Kingston to a match right now. This is how you know you have to kill time. This is how you know you're taping two shows in one night. So we ended up getting another match after the break. It was Sheamus one-on-one with Kofi Kingston. How many times do you think Sheamus and Kofi have had matches since both of them debuted on the main roster? How many times? As many times maybe as we've seen Sheamus and Dolph Ziggler? These two have had to have at least 100 matches against each other. I refuse to believe otherwise. I feel like these two have been in the ring 100 times. Over the last 15 years. Actually, 100 isn't even that much, if it is 100. So the match started during the ad break. Sheamus missed a splash, went for a shoulder first tackle in the corner, but he hit the ring post. Kingston went for the SOS, but Sheamus countered into the Irish curse backbreaker. Sheamus set up for the brogue kick. Kofi avoided it, hit the SOS for a near fall. For the finish, Kingston came off the top rope. Sheamus, though, rocked him with a knee. And Sheamus hit the brogue kick, got the win. After the match, Sheamus and Holland, they jumped the New Day. Sheamus set up a table at ringside, and Holland gave Xavier Woods a powerbomb through the table. That will now lead to a tables match between the New Day, Sheamus, and Ridge Holland next Friday on SmackDown. We had Chapter 4 in the story of Lacey Evans. She talked about getting kicked out of home at 17, became a U.S. Marine at 19, graduated top of her class, and yet when everybody else was looking out into the crowd, into the audience, at her parents weren't there. Her father wasn't there. And obviously that affected her greatly, and she found a new driving force in her life, and it was anger. And these promos get more and more depressing every week that goes by. I thought there was going to be some kind of uplifting message in here. I don't know. To me, it just gets more and more depressing every week. Now she's talking about how anger... Maybe she's going to be a heel. I mean, this is tailor-made to set her up to be a babyface. Maybe the swerve here is that when she finally debuts, she's filled with so much rage and anger that she's actually a fucking heel. Maybe that's the swerve. But she talked about how... she didn't have any of the pats on the back or positive support of the other superstars. She didn't need it. She said she came from the trailer park to WWE, and she was coming for all of the women in the division. So Lacey Evans is on her way back very soon. They ended the show with the Beat the Clock I Quit Challenge with Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. The idea, of course, is to see which one of them can beat their opponent the fastest. It started with Rousey against Shotzi Blackheart, who I completely forgot was even on SmackDown. Charlotte took a seat ringside. They also showed Drew Gulak. Again, they showed him over at the timekeeper's table. Angle alert! Angle alert! Ronda got the ankle lock applied and got Shotzi to say I quit in 1 minute and 41 seconds. So that was the time that was set that Charlotte now had to beat. Shotzi is dead on the main roster. Shotzi Blackheart is absolutely, completely dead. No pulse, no heartbeat. She's done. Tag the toe, she's finished. I'm sorry to say. She is beyond done on the main roster. Stick a fork in her, she's finished. There's nothing else to say about Shotzi Blackheart and her run on the main roster. To say that it has been unimpressive would be an understatement. She's done. Charlotte called out Aaliyah. Had to beat her in a minute 41 or less. Aaliyah got the brief advantage, but Charlotte quickly took over. Rocked Aaliyah with a boot to the face. Then she turned and taunted Ronda at ringside and was taking her time, trying to apply the figure eight. Aaliyah kicked off and sent Flair to ringside. Flair had 10 seconds left in the match. Quickly jumped back into the ring. Tried to lock on the figure eight. But time expired. Ronda Rousey wins the Beat the Clock Challenge. She got up from her seat. She smiled. And she walked to the back. That was it. Charlotte is still in the ring. She's furious about what happened. She walks over to Drew Gulak and blames him for the loss because reasons, I guess. And she kicks him in the face, pushes him around. She grabbed the ring bell. She hit Drew Gulak. Hit him in the back with it. And this is how they went off the air. Unless Adam Pearce makes Drew Gulak the special referee for their match at Backlash, I don't understand what the point of his involvement is consistently week after week like this. This has to be leading to him being assigned the referee role. He's filled every other role, right? He's been a timekeeper. He's been an assistant. He's been an interviewer. The only things left for him to do, next week he'll be a ring announcer, and at Backlash he'll be a referee when Ronda wins the championship. Because Ronda Rousey is not losing an I Quit match to Charlotte Flair. That would be the logical conclusion to this story here. But I know, of course, that logic is not exactly their specialty in this company. This is in the running for worst feud of 2022. We're not even halfway through the year yet. We're not even in May. It's already one of the worst feuds on television, if not the worst, all year long. Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey. This is not working. And for the people who will say, well, you know, weren't you the one that, you know, for the longest time when Ronda was gone, after she left, after that first run, you said you really kind of missed her, you wanted to see her back? I did. But remember what I said. I wanted her back as a heel. I wanted her to embrace those very real feelings that she had, the feelings of scorn that she had for the fans who turned against her and were shouting things against her the first time. She took that personally. She took that to heart. Now you can take that and harness it and use it, and she could have been one of the biggest heels in the entire company, and instead they brought her back and they said, smile! Like they tell Raquel and everybody else, smile. She gets on the mic, she's fucking dull as can be. She is someone who absolutely should have someone talking for her while she stands there and just mean mugs the camera like she's going to rip your limbs off. So no, this is not the version of Ronda Rousey I was expecting when she came back to the company. Not the one I was hoping for. This has been the worst thing on television all year in WWE in terms of the main feuds that they have put forth on TV. This is what they're headlining shows with. If it was like a mid-card feud, it wouldn't even be all that offensive, but I mean, this is like the top feud on the show. Awful. It's awful. Next Friday, on the go-home show to Backlash, we've got New Day against Sheamus and Ridge Holland in a tables match, and Sasha Banks goes one-on-one against Shayna Baszler. That was SmackDown. Smile, Miguel says, smile, Solomon. So I smile every week. I'm smiling right now. I'm looking at the chat. I'm looking at everybody hanging out with me tonight. I have every reason to smile. But you don't see, I don't sit here smiling the way that all those people did in the first Burton Batman movie when they were inhaling the laughing gas. That's what these people on WWE television do. Flip on over to TNT. I could not flip on over to TNT fast enough. Rampage. Open with an Owen Hart Foundation qualifying match. Darby Allin with Sting in his corner, one-on-one against Swerve Strickland. Swerve rolled Darby to the outside. No entrances. This is the way Rampage starts every week. They cut the entrance. They edit this show to shit because they try to shove so much stuff on there. No time for entrances. Darby's in the ring. Swerve is in the ring. Ring the bell. Let's do this. So the match starts. They go back and forth for a bit. Swerve rolls Darby to the outside. He goes for a splash. Darby counters into a cutter. Back in the ring, Darby went for his running missile dive. I love this spot. He went for the missile dive. The torpedo through the ropes. As he's launching himself out of the ring, Swerve caught him with a leaping knee strike. Down went Darby. That was great. After a picture-in-picture, both guys were back inside. Darby locked on a knee bar. Swerve tried to work his way out with punches, and that turned into a suplex for two. Darby landed a code red, got a near fall, went for the coffin drop off the top rope. Swerve, though, got the knees up on the way down. Swerve then landed a sick kick to Darby's head for a two count. Swerve suplexed Darby from the ring apron to the floor. That was a very stupid spot. That took as much out of Swerve as it did Darby. But Darby got the worst of it, though, because he landed on part of the end of the ramp. Just suplexed him, boom, right down on the floor. Swerve, as he threw Darby back inside, and Swerve is about to climb back into the ring, Ricky Starks leaves the announce desk and tried to interfere in the match. Sting, though, cut him off and chased him away. Back in the ring, though, off the distraction, Darby caught Swerve with a leg lock and cradled him for the win to qualify for the Owen. This is a good match. This was a good, solid match that I enjoyed. These two, you know, they didn't give away too much. I wouldn't mind them running this back at some point, a little bit longer. You know, down the road at some point. But these are the types of first-time matches I enjoy seeing. You know, when they announced the match on Wednesday, I thought, that's an interesting combo there, Darby and Swerve. The tournament gave them the perfect excuse to go ahead and do it, babyface against babyface. To my knowledge, I don't believe these two have ever wrestled before. If they did, it was maybe on an indie show years ago, but I think this was a first-time ever match. Certainly in AEW it was, and I enjoy that. I enjoy these types of first-time matches, even if it is babyface against babyface, I'd like to see them do more of this on TV. Jeff Hardy wrestles Bobby Fish on Wednesday in an Owen Hart qualifying match. And this potentially sets up a very interesting Owen Hart tournament match on the men's side. Whether it's the first round, the semifinals, we don't have any brackets yet, because the qualifiers are still ongoing. So Tony Khan has not yet mapped out what he wants the brackets to look like. We don't know. But we could very well end up with Jeff Hardy for the first time against Darby Allin in the Owen. It could be Jeff against Darby. That would be an interesting match. Chris Jericho was at the announce desk, and he awarded himself his own weekly Sports Entertainer of the Week award for his fireball attack on Eddie Kingston on Dynamite on Wednesday night. Threw a fireball in his face in the parking lot. So he awarded the honor to himself. Santana ran out. He attacked Jericho while Ortiz stood by the entranceway to the tunnel, making sure nobody came over and interfered. Referees came out to break them all up. And on Wednesday, we were told, Jericho said he spoke to Tony Khan, and it's going to be Jericho one-on-one against Santana. That could be really good. Santana is somebody who I would like to see have more singles matches. I think he could at some point have a future as a singles star in the company. TNT champion Santana one day, it could happen. So Santana in a singles match against Jericho, that could end up being very good on Wednesday. We had Jade Cargill officially having her own group now, the Baddies. That is now the name of her own little faction that they have given her. So the Baddies and her partners on this show are Red Velvet and Kiera Hogan. They took on Willow Nightingale, Trish Adora, and Sky Blue. James Rayburn coming in with the super chat. I'm going to be reading all of your messages in a little bit. Thank you to James, dropping the disappointed Sala Monster. $5 super chat. So, on commentary, Excalibur tried to explain why Red Velvet had a change of attitude in recent weeks. And he pointed out the fact that when Red Velvet had her Owen Hart qualifying match against Willow Nightingale a few weeks ago, which I believe was on Rampage, the crowd was very unhappy when Red Velvet won the match. I remember that because I was one of those people who was very unhappy and thought that Willow absolutely should have won the match, because that would have meant she's in the tournament and we get to see more of her. She's been very impressive in what I've seen. I've seen her in House of Glory as well, not just in AEW. And she's been impressive, and I would like to see more of her in that women's division. So I like that they tried to explain why all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and it doesn't really explain why she's suddenly best friends with Jade Cargill, who she feuded with, but the fact that she went from babyface to heel rather suddenly like that, I at least appreciate the fact they tried to explain why. Because it's true. People in the audience booed. They reacted negatively when she beat Willow in that match. They wanted to see Willow pick up the win. And I guess that hurt her feelings. So the match started with Sky Blue and Jade. Velvet tagged in and hit Nightingale on the apron. Velvet took down Sky Blue, stomped a mud hole in her in the heels corner. Hogan tagged in, hit a running kick to Sky Blue, and then went for the leg drop, but Blue moved. I never thought I would see Hogan in the ring again hitting the big boot and the leg drop, but here we are. Blue tagged in Trish Adora. Hogan, though, tagged in Jade. Jade landed a boot to the face and then hit the Jaded for the win. We need more Willow. I am a Willow Nightingale fan. We need more Willow. This one, not the other one. Gotta get my Willow straight. This is Willow, not Willow. I'm talking about Willow. Keith Lee against Colton Gunn. Keith Lee continues to rack up wins, but doesn't really have much of a direction on this show. They need to change that. I know he's been aligned with Swerve, and they've had some issues with Team Taz, but I don't know. It seems to me like maybe they don't necessarily know what that next big plan is going to be for Keith Lee. I talked on the Dynamite stream about my issue with the lack of TV time for Malakai Black. I don't want to see that become an issue for Keith Lee either. Malakai is someone who should be on television more than he is. I'd like to see him featured more in a major program on TV. Keith Lee is still, he's newer than Malakai is. He's still relatively new in the company. But he's not really doing a whole hell of a lot right now. So he took control early, hit some loud chops. We went to picture-in-picture. The majority of this fucking match took place in picture-in-picture. Literally, if this was a five-minute match, 3.5 of those minutes were in a tiny box on my screen. No good. No good. They come back from break. Lee threw Gunn across the ring, ran into Austin Gunn in the corner accidentally because he was trying to interfere in his brother's match. Colton tried to hit a Famouser. Lee caught him, though, lifted him up, and then slammed him for the win with the Big Bang Catastrophe, which they are not, I haven't heard the announcers use that name yet. So I don't know why, but that's what it was. And Keith Lee picked up the win. Not much to it. And like I said, most of this happened during the break. Not a fan of that. We then got a Hardy Boys promo backstage. Jeff said that he loves and misses Owen Hart. He said a dream match would be Jeff Hardy against Darby Allin in the tournament, but he also mentioned Samoa Joe is qualified. That could be another one. Matt jumped in and said that Bobby Fish is going to eat a Swanton Bomb from Jeff on Dynamite next week. So then we switched to the back, and we saw the Undisputed Elite, the Young Bucks, Red Dragon, Adam Cole, Brandon Cutler, they were all there. And Bobby Fish called Jeff Hardy Jeff Hardly, and then looked at the Bucks, who thought that was very clever. So Jim Cornette has been calling, for those who don't know, Jim Cornette has been calling the Young Bucks the Hardly Boys for years. So clearly someone has been paying attention. Not the first time we've had a Cornette reference on one of these AEW shows. So for all the horrible things that he has said about these people, and I mean, he hates the Bucks and he hates Kenny Omega. Absolutely hates them. If he saw them on fire on the side of the road, he wouldn't piss on them to put them out. Absolutely hates their guts and thinks that they have single-handedly ruined the business, I guess, that he loves so much. Because Kenny once wrestled a blow-up doll and a 9-year-old girl. And the Bucks he hates for whatever reasons he hates the Bucks for. But they all listen, they all pay attention, and every now and then CM Punk has done this before. They slip in a little Cornette reference on the show. Danhausen came out and said that he was here to annihilate and decimate the one that you call Hook. And he said, send Hook. And they played Hook's music, and out comes Hook. Ask and ye shall receive. This was not a match. This was supposed to be a face-to-face confrontation. That's what they advertised for this show. Beowulf says they are. LOL. Hardy cosplayers. You know what's funny about that? When the Young Bucks first debuted and I first saw them in Ring of Honor, they were Generation Me in TNA back in the day. It was pretty clear who they modeled themselves after. I mean, they were like a carbon copy of the Hardy Boys. But they went on to carve out quite the career for themselves. You have to give them credit, whether you like their style of matches or not. They kind of made their own, they made their own place. But yeah, of course, the way they dressed and everything, they very much were, you know, Hardy Boys 2.0, especially when they first debuted. I mean, how can you look at them and think anything else? So once Hook got into the ring, Danhausen had second thoughts about what he had done. And he suggested maybe they do this next week, and Hook said, we're doing this right now. Second time Hook has spoken on television. We're doing this now. We'll do it live, even though this show wasn't live. Out comes Smart Mark Sterling from the back asking the crowd, do you really want to see these two fight? Everybody said yes. And he said, well, I don't. And at that moment, Tony Nese, his new client, attacked Hook from behind, and he attacked Danhausen. Sterling got in the ring. He went after Hook. Hook took him over with a judo throw. And then he went after Tony Nese. He suplexed him, rolled to the floor. Nese got hot, and he went to go climb back into the ring when Danhausen tried to put the Danhausen curse on them. And they backed off. What they didn't see, though, is behind, and what Danhausen didn't see, is right behind him was Hook. So they were backing away from Hook. Danhausen thought they were backing away from the curse. In fact, it was the guy behind him. And that is how the segment ended. The crowd chanted Hookhausen, and Danhausen wanted a handshake. Hook wasn't having any of it. He grabbed him, he yelled at him, and he shoved him away, and he walked off. So this is playing out, you know, in a way that I thought it would, where there's going to be this oddball pairing between these two. And I think that what will end up happening here is it'll almost be a case where anybody who threatens Danhausen, I feel like Hook is going to be protective of him. He'll attack them. He'll take them out. But he's not going to be buddy-buddy with him. They're not going to become, you know, some kind of permanent that would be awful if they became some kind of long-term combo. You know, the crowd was into it on this show. I think there's a way you can do this without Hook, you know, losing a lot of the aura that he still has. You know, I don't want to see him out there doing goofy shit, but, you know, it wasn't horrible what they did here on this show. They have to be careful with how they do it, but I think there is a way to do this. Keep it entertaining and also protect Hook from getting too far deep into the goofy stuff and the comedy stuff, which I don't think he should be doing. But this was fine, and again, the crowd was into what they saw. And then we had the main event. Samoa Joe defending his Ring of Honor television championship for the first time, one-on-one against Trent Barretta. They brought in Ian Riccaboni to join Excalibur and Jericho and Taz on commentary, which was a nice touch. Bobby Cruz was back doing the ring announcing for this. Joe went for a tope, though. Barretta avoided it and hit Joe with a sliding knee from the apron to the floor. Barretta followed up with an acai moonsault. Went for a tornado DDT, but Joe tossed him and then caught him with a boot as they cut to their final break. After the break, Barretta caught Joe on the floor with a diving crossbody from the top all the way down to the floor, and then a back suplex in the ring. Joe came back with a powerbomb into the high stack for the pin attempt. Trent kicked out, though, and Joe immediately transitioned into the crossface, a move we've seen him do many times before. Barretta was able to get his foot on the bottom rope, so he got the break. Trent slapped Joe. Don't know why you would do that. That doesn't seem very wise. And Joe retaliated with a hard clothesline and knocked him into the middle of next week. All that did was piss him off. He sent Barretta on the top rope and hooked him in for the muscle buster. But before he could drop him, Trent slipped out, hit a front drop kick. He charged at Joe in the corner. Joe caught him, though, with the Uranage sit down. Slams him down to the mat. And then he locked on the Coquina clutch, choked him out for the win. Joe retains the Ring of Honor TV title. I thought this was a good match. Thought it was a good main event. After the match, the two adhered to the code of honor. They shook hands with each other. Tony Schiavone got into the ring to interview Joe, who was completely gassed. I mean, we talked about Britt Baker on Dynamite last week. When they immediately tried to interview her in the ring after her match, she had that Owen qualifier, and she was, you know, gasping for air at various points during her promo. So, you know, maybe don't ambush these people immediately after they have their match. Give them a little bit of time to catch their breath, maybe. So Joe could barely speak. Thankfully for him, he was interrupted by Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh, who walked down to the ring. Orange Cassidy walked right in front of them because Orange Cassidy was out there in Trent's corner. And now we have the face-off. It was Orange Cassidy face to chest with Satnam Singh, and he starts giving him the weak kicks. Jay Lethal has seen enough of this, and he attacked Orange Cassidy, got into the ring. He and Joe got into a scuffle. Referees and agents climbed in to break them up. I spotted Pat Buck in the ring. Fresh off his WWE exit, he went from producing the main event matches at WrestleMania this year to saying, you know what, I think I'm done here. I want to go spend some more time with my family. What he didn't tell WWE is that he wanted to go spend some more time with his AEW family. And he immediately started working for AEW. You gotta love it. So I like the opener. I like the main event. I like the opener. I like the opener more than the main event. And the rest of this was just, you know, it was blah. You know, it was just blah. It was perfectly inoffensive. There was nothing in there that made my blood pressure soar or made me angry. Outside of the picture-in-picture stuff, where the match ends up going longer in the box than it does full screen when they come back from the break, that pisses me off. But the rest of the show, it was just kind of there. You know, it was average, standard, decent fare, but Darby and Swerve was easily the best thing on the show. So we go to the Twitter poll. We'll start with SmackDown. 2 weeks in a row, no bueno. 15% thumbs up. 15% thumbs up for the SmackDown show. 24% thumbs in the middle, and 60. That's 6-0. 60% thumbs down. Over on the AEW side, 66% thumbs up, 20% thumbs in the middle, 13, almost 14% thumbs down. So there it is. You guys give Rampage the win for this week. The Sound Off Army here tonight has spoken. If you guys missed it, if you are a channel member, you missed a really fun call-in stream last night. Better Call Saul, Monster. It is open to all channel members, regardless of what tier you are on. It is in the archives. We went about 90 minutes, took a whole bunch of phone calls from you guys, and had a good time. So if you missed it, go back and check it out. We'll do another one of those very soon. And also, if you missed the latest Sound Off Gamer, My Rise Edition, yes, indeed, Saul, Monster. There you see it. Solo Monster demoted to the main roster. Wait until you see how I got fucked by the referee in one of these matches. The slowest count that you have ever seen in your entire life. In the time it took this referee in this particular match, in the time that it took him, okay, to count from 9 to 10, there were two world wars, 10 WrestleManias, you could fit them all in the amount of time that it took for this referee to even attempt to count 10, which he never did, by the way. He allowed my opponent to get back into the ring. As I said in the video, this referee should be fired. He should be, at the very least, suspended. Have his refereeing privileges revoked. I haven't seen officiating this bad since last week's AEW show. I'm not sure if this guy is worse than Rick Knox. It's tough. I think of the worst referees. I think of the worst umpires in baseball. I think of that referee in that game. I think of Rick Knox, and I think of Angel Hernandez. Three people who are horrible at their job. I'm getting fucked left and right in this game. But there were some positive moments as well. I picked up some wins. It wasn't all bad. So go check that out. Oh. Let's get to your super chats. Bryce Remsburg. There will be no Bryce Remsburg slander in this chat. You know, Angel Hernandez would have been the perfect, you know, heel referee in the NWO back in the day. I know they had Nick Patrick, but shout out to Wendell Bobby, who just subscribed to the channel. Welcome, Wendell Bobby. Go check out some of that Sound Off Gamer content I was just telling you about. Let's take a look at your super chats here before we close out the night. Nayef Al-Safar, thank you, my friend, for the double super chat drop before we even went live tonight. You are awesome. Matthew Dinkins, $9.99 Super Chat. Dakota Kai might be the most underrated female wrestler for the last few years. If she goes to AEW, she would be the best woman wrestler in the company on day one. Groovy Goose, congrats on the combined no-hitter solo. Cheers. Well, you congratulate me. I didn't do anything. But thank you. I was very happy when I flipped over and saw the celebrating going on the field. It's a good night. It's a good night to be a Mets fan. You know, over the years, I haven't had too many opportunities to say that. You remember the segment I did on the podcast a few years ago with the big tournament bracket that somebody put together of all of the ridiculous, horrible Mets incidents from over the years. There were like 32 of them. It was this gigantic tournament bracket. Going down the list of all the different embarrassments in this franchise over the years. Tonight was a good night. So far, this has been a great season. I don't want to jinx it. Hyru dropping a pair of $5 super chats. 5 + 5 = 10. $10 super chat will get you a Russo on a pole, in case you didn't know. Dakota Kai was the unsung hero of the NXT women's division. And the fact that she never got called up was baffling. WWE drops the ball yet again. Is it too late in the ball game to build Shayna Baszler to build to a Shayna versus Ronda feud for SummerSlam? Tired of seeing Shayna in makeshift tag teams. No, it's not too late at all. I wonder, though, you know, if it were me, though, again, I go back to the idea of heel Ronda. I would have aligned the two of them. People know they're friends. I would have had Ronda and Shayna together, and they can do the occasional tag match as well, but I would have put the two of them together. And I like the idea of doing that, and then eventually you could split them and have them feud, but they didn't go down that road. So if Shayna is going to be stuck in tag team matches for the foreseeable future, I think one way to kind of pluck her out of that would be to set her up maybe later in the summer to challenge Ronda Rousey for the championship and play off their history and play off their friendship together. Rizzo dropping $20. Holy shit, Rizzo dropping a 20 spot. So frustrating with these releases, more so Harlan / Parker Boudreaux's release. NXT 2.0 was made for talent like him that needed seasoning. Why should we be invested in NXT when they either change the character or release the talent? I mean, it's what I've been saying for the longest time. It's hard to really get invested in any of the characters on that show when you know that if they happen to get called up to the main roster and not cut first, that it's going to be a very different future for them up there. I mean, it's the nature of what NXT is now. NXT is a little sandbox they play in, and they can make changes, and they can, it's like being in practice mode or being in training mode in a fucking video game. They try different things, they try different characters, they try different moves, they try different names. None of it matters once they get called up to the big time, because they're just going to change everything anyway. Does that make for a television show where you can get invested? Not for me, it doesn't. Maybe for some other people. I keep hearing about from people every week, NXT, oh, that's actually really good, and NXT is great. Like, I'm continuing to watch NXT every week, and I have certain people who I like more than others who are my favorites. NXT overall, it's awful. I don't know what these people are watching. It's a hard show to watch. This is one of the reasons why, but even just standalone, just forget about, you know, what the future is going to, just watching it as a show, it's fucking terrible. Most weeks. I don't know what these people are watching. Oz and Gloria says, enjoyed Rampage, loving the Ring of Honor crossover stuff. Hey, Glow Mighty Show in the chat, it is officially his 32nd birthday, so happy 32 to the Glowmeister. Congrats. I hope you get everything that you're looking for this weekend. We got Roka Will 23 dropping the $15 super chat. I understand Triple H's NXT change due to the show losing to AEW in the ratings, but I truly believe the Velveteen Dream scandal put a huge nail in NXT 1.0's coffin. Interesting. I think it's, you're overplaying it, because they downplayed it so much that they almost just buried the entire thing. They're lucky it didn't become more of a scandal at that time when it was being talked about. There's plenty of reasons why NXT went through the changes it did. I don't think Velveteen Dream had much to do with it, but it's an interesting observation. Corey Blake, hey Solomonster, how about those Mets? A no-hitter tonight, buy or sell on the 2022 Mets. Thanks for the amazing work that you do. I am going to buy on the 2022 Mets. Robbie Hyde. How would you progress Sami Zayn's character over the next year? Do you think he could become a main eventer? Maybe Money in the Bank winner. I could see Money in the Bank. I could see that. You know, honestly, how do you progress the character at this point? He's going around, you know, playing the role of conspiracy nut, chicken shit heel. The ultimate progression would be eventually to make him a babyface again. Don't forget, Sami Zayn was a tremendous babyface in NXT. But, you know, for the most part, I enjoy Zayn's current character. I think he's doing great work with it. He's largely entertaining in the role. I'm still waiting for the documentary film that they supposedly were filming actual stuff for. I want that thing to come out. I want them to get back to that. That's what I would like, the progression that I would like to see. Is the eventual release. I put a whole story pitch together months and months and months ago on the podcast for this. I would love for them to get back to the conspiratorial stuff and the movie stuff. And then one day, finally, he's about ready to debut the finished product. And we find out that it's an actual documentary. Like, they have been filming months and months worth of footage. And they air parts of it on television. Or they release it on social media. But they show highlights on TV. And we come to find out something in that video. We see something in the background, you know, two people who you wouldn't expect to be hanging out together. I would love for his story to sort of intertwine with something else going on the show. And it leads to storyline consequences for someone else. Because then at least, it almost at that point, it feels like, well, this wasn't just sort of made up for nothing, like, holy shit, it actually led to a big storyline twist in this other story that's going on, and maybe Sammy was telling the truth, you know, and holy shit, you know, this whole time we thought that he was cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and it turns out that, you know, he actually has uncovered some sort of conspiracy going on behind the scenes in WWE. You know, maybe we see Adam Pearce in the background taking payoffs or something, who knows? I would love to see something like that. Are they thinking in that direction? Probably not. We got Brandon Proctor. I'm going to Dynamite in Missouri in June. Congratulations. That's one more Dynamite than I've been to. You'll have fun, I'm sure. Colin C. Hey, Solomonster, what's cracking? My knuckles. What's your opinion on how Tony Khan is handling the Ring of Honor product thus far without mentioning any TV deals, roster, or pay-per-views? I'm getting WCW purchase circa 2001 vibes. I'm not getting those vibes at all. I think that he just closed on the transaction relatively recently. He's still trying to work out where television is going to be. You know, he wants weekly television somewhere. And I think he's probably working behind the scenes, and maybe he's working with Warner Media. There's a lot of stuff going on with Warner Media right now and the merger with Discovery. The timing is not ideal if he's hoping to get some kind of a TV deal on a Warner station. I don't see Ring of Honor ending up on TNT or TBS. So he has to work that out first, because without television, you really don't have a product. You really don't. You know, I know GCW doesn't have a TV show, and they're running their shows, and they have their loyal, hardcore fan base. Ring of Honor needs TV. You can't go from having TV to having no TV. And YouTube, forget YouTube. So he has to work that out. I'm sure that's being worked out behind the scenes. He is not abandoning Ring of Honor so fast. He is not giving up on it so fast. I think on this, we should have, if we don't have more solid answers about Ring of Honor in the next couple of months, I would start to worry. If you're a Ring of Honor fan, I would start to worry. I would not worry just yet. Samoan Fan 101, Adam Pearce was sexting Sonya Deville. Well, thank you for that fucking nightmare fuel tonight. Adam Pearce and sexting should never be in the same sentence together. I don't want to hear it. I don't know why you... It's 12:45 in the morning. My head is going to hit the pillow soon. And I now have to have this this image in my head. Samoan Fan, thank you very much. He also wants to know, since when can Paul Heyman change matches at will? you're asking questions like you want some logical answer to them? Are you out of your mind? And also, he says, Sheamus and Kofi have had 11 singles matches, 9 on TV. That's bullshit. That's bullshit. You're talking over a period of 15 years? I don't buy that for a second. I don't care what Pro Wrestling Database has to say. You're telling me that in all these years, these two guys have had 11 matches together? Fuck yeah. I don't buy that for a second. Shinakuma, it may not be a top 5 or top 10, but I love the last man standing match at Royal Rumble 04 between Shawn Michaels and Triple H. I like their World Heavyweight title match even better on Raw the month before. The one that had the dusty finish. Vontel, better rivalry, Orton and Christian or Batista and Undertaker? Orton and Christian. James Auburn, smile though your heart is aching. Smile even though it's breaking. Says WWE to its talent. Prince Walker, we 1,000% need more Willow. She's the ultimate babyface, and if built up, could be the one to beat Jade. Joseph Brooks, $4.99 super chat. Always wanted to know this. Was there ever talk of Y2J coming to TNA? I remember his band Fozzy being used for the Bound for Glory promo in 06. No. They wanted to use his music. I remember that. They did use it for a promo package. I'm not aware of there being any serious discussion. I'm not saying there weren't discussions at some point. He had friends in the company, you know, Scott D'Amore and other people that he knew who were working there at the time. I'm sure they would have loved to have brought Jericho in, but I'm not aware of there ever being a point where he was having serious discussions with them, so I don't believe so. Food Hive, Cody and Stone Cold, can I borrow a Peacock sub? Yeah, Cody is going to be on the Broken Skull Sessions in 2 weeks, I believe. May 6th. That's the Friday before the... Actually, no, less than 2 weeks. That's, holy shit, that's next week. That's a week from today. Cody is going to be on the Broken Skull Sessions with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Adam Pearce and Prince Albert as a tag team. Called the Princes of the Universe with the Queen song from Highlander as their theme. Interesting that came from someone named Dick Tickles. EJ Slemp, $4.99 super chat. How much influence does an agent have on a match or a segment? Have you ever been able to figure out which agent was assigned by comparing past matches? I have not developed a knack for picking up on agent patterns before, but my understanding from people who have talked about how the whole agenting thing works, at least in WWE, there is a certain level of influence. I mean, in terms of, you know, their job is to communicate key instructions. Okay, here's what they want from you. Here's how much time you have. Here's who's going over. They could give you some, you know, advice on, you know, something they want you to do in the match. But, I mean, largely, they're really just kind of middlemen. I mean, they're really just explaining what it is that Vince McMahon wants you to do. And then you are expected to go out there and do it. And if things don't go well, or you go over your time, or anything like that, you know, the agent probably gets a lot of heat. Dustin Rhodes has talked about that. Dustin Rhodes has talked about there being so much more freedom in that role behind the scenes in AEW than he ever had when he was an agent in WWE. He didn't last very long. As I remember, there was something, maybe it was a SmackDown episode. Someone got hurt? They did like a crazy move maybe and someone got hurt, and I think he was the agent assigned that he got in trouble. He might have gotten fired for it. Offhand, I don't remember all the specific details, but I'm sure somebody in the chat will know what I'm talking about. So, you know, not a whole lot of freedom, I would say. I think it really is more just a case of them being the middlemen, communicating what it is that the boss wants. Because the boss The boss can't go around and talk to everybody all the time, right? He's got to have his little minions do the talking for him. So that's kind of what their role is. Food Hive. Yes, yes, it was Yoshitatsu. That's what it was. That's right. Primetime players, Yoshitatsu. That's what I'm remembering. I think Dustin was the one. He took the bullet. He took the fall for that. Was it Yoshi who got hurt? Is that what happened in that segment? Where they did some kind of crazy, like, dangerous move. It might have been like a Road Warriors Doomsday device or something. Right, Miguel will tell me. Food Hive said, the slowest count, the funniest video ever. Yes, thank you for that supercut that you put together. I retweeted it earlier. Spaghetti. Better Call Saul, semi-spoilers. What do you think Kim Wexler's fate will be in the finale? Yeah, I don't want to give away any kind of spoilers here for anybody who might watch it. I am I'm a little worried for her fate, but I'm thinking that she'll be okay, and I'm hoping that when they have the flash forward at the end to the modern day, that maybe we'll get a reunion. Let's see, what do we got here? King Bling Blah. Vince, he says Vice. Not Vince. Vice hasn't renewed Darkseid for season 4 yet. Yeah, I talked about this yesterday. Was it yesterday on the call-in? Was it the call-in show? Might have been the call-in show or the Dynamite stream. I talked about that the other night. Yeah, I mean, if they haven't been renewed yet, it's not surprising. I think that after what happened with the Ric Flair episode, there's going to be some people who are very hesitant to want to sit down and talk to them. And I also think that, you know, part of it also is that some of the things that they cover, you know, people are dying off. Some of these stories, if they did one on the Ring Boy scandal, the sex scandals in WWF in the early 90s, who's left? Like the key players, who's left for them to talk to? So I think it's a combination of those two things. I don't know that we're going to be getting another season of Dark Side of the Ring. I think they would have announced it by now if they were going to do it. And do not pass go. Thank you for the $5 super chat. I appreciate it. But look, I've enjoyed the 3 seasons that they've done so far. Right? So, there have been a lot of really good Dark Side episodes that they've done. They've covered a lot of the key stories that I would have wanted to see them cover. Part of it also is eventually you run out of things to talk about. You run out of things to cover. But I think what happened to Tommy Dreamer and the Ric Flair fallout, why would you want to even put yourself in that position where you can end up getting yourself in trouble just by opening your mouth when you don't have to? Frank Aquilino. $9.99 Super Chat. Was at the AEW show this week. We were big into Swerve and Darby and Hook, but sadly we were dead for the rest of Rampage. It was a long night. That was one very similar thing I think that we got from both shows tonight. You know, taping 2 SmackDowns in one night, it just kills the crowd. They don't do it very often. They doubled up because of the European tour, but it was a common theme, I think, on both shows. More noticeable on SmackDown than it was Rampage, but that's just because of the way they were able to edit Rampage. It's such a frenetic pace, they're going so quickly from one thing to the next, that the crowd didn't seem overly dead for the key stuff on the show. So it wasn't as noticeable there, but yeah, no, I mean, Rampage, they're taping Rampage, you know, 10 to 11. Some people don't want to stick around for it. They have work. They have, you know, school for their kids the next day. Mr. Dynamite says, you know what would be a good idea for a show? Dark Side of the Court. What court? Yeah, Jim Ross also made those comments. He wasn't very happy with how some of his comments were edited on some of those Dark Side episodes, and he said that if they came back for another season, he didn't say, you know, guaranteed, but he said very good chance he wouldn't come back. He wouldn't be back on the show. So I'm telling you, I mean, that as much as anything, they really, I think, sealed their fate when the Flair episode dropped and there was such a backlash to multiple people. None more so probably than, Flair himself, but none more so than Tommy Dreamer. And again, if you are one of these old school guys, that's who they're looking to interview. They don't want to talk to the new guys. They want to talk to the old guys. Why would any of them want to go on? If people don't want to come on, you have no show. You need to have people to interview. That was always going to be an issue. And maybe that's what they ran into. Rizzo dropping $20. Look at this. Rizzo. And like you said, these wrestlers saw what happened during the Flair Dark Side episode. And I don't know if you heard, but JR said he is done talking to them for how they edited him. So yes, we just got done talking about that. He was complimentary of the producers, and he says he likes them as people. But I guess there was something, he didn't specify what, but there was something that he was obviously irked by in terms of how some of his comments were edited. So, which if that's true, you can completely understand that. You know, I get it. Samoan fan says, you're confusing Kofi and Sheamus with The Bar and The New Day. No, I'm not. Juan Ocampo, $5 super chat. We need a budget cuts super chat. A Quantum TV, since you want to false flag videos on YouTube and continue with your crap responses, now you are a public enemy number one. What the hell is Quantum TV? What fucking Mickey Mouse provider are you using? Or are you in another country? Where are you? I've never heard of Quantum TV before. Are you out of the country? What the hell is Quantum TV? Teddy Hart, Dark Side. Yeah, Teddy Hart. Teddy Hart is not only a Dark Side episode. Tammy Sitch, they could do a whole fucking season on her. I'll have an update on her on the podcast this weekend also. Now, on Wednesday, we had our best night ever of Be the Booker. I always thought about just taking the rest of the week off with Be the Booker, because how can we possibly top what we did on Wednesday? But I am a glutton for punishment, and so I'm going to give it another shot. It is time to Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
It is Be the Booker time. If you don't know what Be the Booker is, well, then shame on you, because you haven't been here before. But if you are new here, I have created these randomized images for the men and the women. And I book like WWE sometimes books. I'm going to book a completely random main event, and we are going to see what kind of a main event it would be. I have no idea who or what it's going to land on, but that's part of the fun. We have no idea what match we're going to book. We could book Roman Reigns against the fucking gobbledygooker. Or we could book some badass matches like Bret Hart against Randy Orton, which is what I booked the other night. I think it's going to be pretty hard to top that, but we're going to try. We're going to give it a shot. We'll start with the men. See what main event we can book. Don't book worse than Bruce, says Miguel. The last person I want to be compared to. We begin with Roman Reigns, the tribal chief himself, the head of the table, the WWE Universal Champion. Holy shit, I just said Roman Reigns against the gobbledygooker. Do you think I will land on the gobbledygooker? How fucking eerie would that be if I actually booked Roman Reigns against the gobbledygooker? But we're off to a hell of a start here. We've got the biggest star in the entire company right now. Over 600 days as champion. How about that? Let's see. Oh boy. This is going to be very interesting. Who do we land on here? It will be Roman Reigns, one-on-one. With Sheamus. I like Sheamus. Sheamus actually has very good matches. I don't want to give this the buzzer, because I don't think that would be a bad match. But I also don't want to give it the bell, because it's not really a match that makes me very excited. I'm kind of indifferent towards this. Roman Reigns against Sheamus would be a very good TV match, though. That would be a very good TV main event. Not something I would put on pay-per-view, but I think that would be a good match. So not bad. 2015 all over again. Hey, I got news for you. Most matches in WWE have been done at one point or another. So let's see what we come up with here on the lady. Boy, I hope I don't land on any ladies that were released today. That would suck. We begin with Natalya. Natalya, who has been pulling double duty on the main roster and on NXT these past few weeks. Let's see, Natalya, one-on-one with Ronda Rousey. I don't have any interest in seeing that match. Weren't they like best friends during Ronda's first run, right? They were like bosom buddies when Ronda first came into the company. Ronda Rousey against Natty. Yeah, no thank you. No thank you. But wait. Wait a minute. Somebody is running down to the... Holy shit, guys, we have a run-in. We have a fucking run-in here in this match. First time. I'm Be the Booker here with the women. We have a run-in. This person wants... Adam Pearce is making this a triple threat match. It will be Ronda Rousey versus Natty versus Brandi Rhodes. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Brandi Rhodes runs in and makes it a triple threat match with Natty and Ronda Rousey. Just when you didn't think it could possibly go from bad to worse, somehow it does. Well, see, I knew I should have left well enough alone after Wednesday, man. I knew it. Temjin, you're right. I asked for it. I asked for it. What would that look like? Ronda Rousey, Brandi Rhodes, and Natalya in a triple threat match. Who goes over? Because Ronda could lose without being pinned. I think Brandi probably gets the win, right? She'll like sneak in a win. Shin Akuma. We've got super chat from Shin. Why did they do the rematch between Triple H and Steiner at No Way Out 03 if match one went horrible? Because they had planned to do two matches between them and they had to fill it somehow. They needed an opponent for Triple H to beat. And I think maybe they were also hoping to make up for their horrible, shitty match at the Royal Rumble. And it was better than the Royal Rumble, but it still wasn't very good. You know what they say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. Food Hive, with the $1.99, Solomonster is booking for Control Your Narrative. No, because I have more people in this chat than they do at their shows, so... We actually have I'm pretty sure we actually have a bigger audience here tonight than the last Control Your Narrative show. I'm just saying. Samoan fan, Natalya has a large... Yes, okay, very nice. Very nice, Samoan fan. Steven Escalante Gonzalez, love your channel, Solo Monster. Keep up the amazing work. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I'm glad you're enjoying your stay. We had a fun stream on Wednesday. We had a decent one tonight. You know, I need shows that actually inspire me. I need shows that actually are fun to watch. SmackDown was not fun to watch. Rampage is what Rampage is. Rampage is not really a bad show, but it's also not overly exciting. So Friday night, out of the last few weeks, has left me underwhelmed. Steiner had awful cardio during that time. He also had that drop foot issue. He had some issue or problem with his foot. Drop foot syndrome, I think it's called. Morphine. I think so, yeah. I think the Mets and the Cardinals are going to throw down next month. I don't think the heat there is dead yet between those two. Replace Rampage with Ring of Honor? I don't think that TNT wants that. Hey, Devin from NJ2000. He's been a channel member for 13 months. Overall thoughts on The Wire. Would it make your top five greatest shows that you have seen? I finally finished The Wire a few months ago. I only saw it for the first time this year, all five seasons. I loved it. It's a very good show. I don't know if it makes... It definitely doesn't make my top three. My top three has stayed the same. Top five, if it does, it would probably be number five, but it might not. It might not. I'm a pretty big Ozark fan. Ozark is pretty damn good. But it's not top three. Doesn't mean I didn't like it, but it's not top three for me. And Frost, I talked to Frost on the call-in show last night. Even in your impromptu matches, you still mess up most of these bookings. It's hilarious. It's the luck of the draw, my friend. That's why they call it the randomizer. You never know what you're going to get. I added in a couple of new ladies, by the way, to the women's one. See, the good thing about me putting my own Be the Booker animations together, as opposed to the original one that I was using from Zinfamous, our boy Zinfamous HD, shout out to him, is that I have the template. I can just add new ones, new people in whenever I want. So there were a couple of NXT additions. We put them in there. So now there'll be even more names that are being mixed up in there that might come up in the future. Uffman Entertainment, Sound Off Legend, says, this says I've been a member for 7 months. I'm pretty sure I've hit a year already. I don't know why it says that. It says here in the chat, though, member for 13. So, at least on my end, I have the correct numbers. I gotcha. I know you've been here for a while. You've been here since day one. I've only had the channel memberships open for 13 months. Beowulf says, Sopranos, The Incredible Hulk, and The Office are his top three shows. Yeah, it's without ranking them, I've said what mine are. It's The Sopranos, The Shield, and Breaking Bad. But again, Ozark and Better Call Saul. I don't know. The Wire is up there, but top five, you know what? It might not be. It might not be. You know what show I never watched? And if any of you did, let me know if it's worth it. Oz. With the guy in the wheelchair. Oz on HBO. Is that any good? Because I used to see that. I would flip past it. I never actually watched it. So I don't know if it's worth going back into it. Food Hive says, do you think Rick Grimes is coming back? Well, I mean, they said we're not going to see him ever again on the TV show. I know they're doing the three spinoff movies. So, yeah, Rick Grimes is coming back. They're literally filming spinoff movies with him as the lead character. If you mean on the TV show, I would like for them telling us that he is not going to be back on the show. I would love for that to be like a red herring and then he actually shows up in the finale or something. I think we need to see him back one last time on the show. And that could be, you know, maybe how they then sort of get into the movies. Yeah, he was the heart and soul of that show, and we know he's alive, so you got to get him back on. Oz is amazing, says Trevis. Mr. Dynamite says Oz was awesome. Yeah, I'm not talking about fucking Kevin Nash as Oz. I'm talking about the television show. Oz the character in WCW was the shit. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the TV show from the 90s. Sons of Anarchy, I never saw it. I probably should. I heard there's a lot of characters or actors who are on The Shield, who are on that show. But no, I never saw Sons of Anarchy. Shin Akuma, $10 super chat. Man, Shin is bringing the heat. Did you ever wrestle with your friends or family when you were younger? I will always remember getting the botched pedigree from my cousin on the Christmas popcorn can. Bloody nose and all. There was someone who powerbombed me once on, it was grass, so I figured, okay, what's the big deal? You know, it's a dirt and grass. It's not like it's the fucking sidewalk. And so, you know, I let him powerbomb me, and I must have hit a rock or something. There must have been a rock, like, right behind my head. So, powerbomb me on the fucking grass. And I landed with the back of my head against the rock, and I don't know. I don't remember too much after that, but that didn't feel too good. Yeah, Michael Chiklis was on Sons of Anarchy. I heard he had like a cat. Was he in like one episode or something? He was like a truck driver or something. I knew Chiklis had some kind of cameo on that show, but for some reason I thought maybe he was like a truck driver or something. Food Hive says the original Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, and The Walking Dead are his favorite shows. Black Mirror is a great show. Not every episode is a winner. For those who don't know Black Mirror, it's a very weird show. I can't even really describe it to you. It's a very weird show on Netflix. Every episode is its own standalone story. There's no, you know, season-long storylines or anything like that. Every episode is completely different. And some of them are very disturbing. In fact, the very first episode is very disturbing of that show. But I loved it. It's weird. Like, every season has a different number of episodes. There's, like, some seasons that have, like, 3 or 4 episodes. And then others have more. I have not heard a single thing about Black Mirror coming back. So I would love to know if it's coming back anytime soon. I do miss that show. Honestly, the one that disturbed me the most... One of the ones that disturbed me the most, I think, was the Just Shut Up and Dance episode with the big twist at the end. That was fucking ridiculous. I did not see that coming. You talk about a swerve at the end? Holy shit. The Mount Vernon Kid, the Alpha, drop in a $10 super chat. See what happens when you don't leave the booking alone. Phone, Rhonda, and Natty had a good Raw match just because you didn't find it interesting, my brother. Hulkling 93 and I were cracking up. That's quite the run-on sentence. I'm rereading it just to make sure I understood what you were saying at the beginning there. Yes. Now, Natty and Rhonda is buzzer-worthy in 2022. I don't care what anybody says. Get on Cobra Kai? You know, I should. Everybody tells me I should watch Cobra Kai. There's so many shows. There's hardly any time, and there's so many shows. I don't know what's going to happen to that Snowpiercer show. That's a TNT show, right? And they're getting out of the business of scripted programming, so I assume that show is probably getting canceled. Law and Order Organized Crime with Chris Maloney. Yep, I've been watching that. I've seen every episode so far. Do I think JTG should have been world champion? No. But he definitely could have had, especially now, if you see JTG, holy shit, the guy's, he's built like a fucking brick house. I think you could definitely bring him back. He can get a run. But should he have been world champion? No. And I like JTG. I've had him on my show twice. But no. Stop watching the wrestling and you'll have time. Yeah, but then I won't have a show and a channel. So that's kind of a problem there. Daredevil on Disney Plus. Yeah. Maybe. Have I watched No Way Home? No. No. I feel like I have to watch all of the Spider-Man movies I missed in order for that to really, you know, to get the full impact of it. Last Spider-Man movie I saw was Spider-Man 3 with Venom. That's like the, wasn't that the last Raimi movie that he did? Spider-Man movie? I mean, we're going back a ways there. I've got a lot of Spider-Man to be catching up on first. Rizzo here with one last super chat. What do you think of the rumors of NXT going back to Full Sail University? I think it's a smart decision. Well, it was a throwaway line in The Observer by Meltzer, who said that there have been talks about possibly returning to Full Sail. That doesn't mean that they would leave the Performance Center and go back full-time to Full Sail. That could mean they're going to go back to do maybe a one-off, like a nostalgia thing, you know, maybe for like a big takeover type of event. Or it could mean that they're going to go back there and start taping television again, which would be weird because they invested all this money to upgrade the Performance Center and the lighting and the screens. I can't see them taking the weekly show out of that building. So anything they do with Full Sail would probably be, you know, maybe a one-time thing or an every now and then thing. I just can't imagine they invested all this money in upgrading everything, you know, at the PC to just then a few months later take the show back to Full Sail. What sense would that make? To me, though, the issue is less with where the show is being held as much as it's the show itself. It's like putting lipstick on a pig, you know. It's still, you could doll it up any which way you want to, but it's still a pig. Which is not to say that everything about the show is horrible, but it has a lot of problems. Moving the show from one building to the other is not going to fix those problems. There's other issues that need to be addressed with NXT other than where the show is actually being taped. That's my thoughts on the Full Sail thing. Hulkling 93, season one of Netflix's Daredevil, is a near masterpiece. Ah, oh, he was offended by me going, eh. Well, I mean, it's just because, you know, again, Daredevil. I didn't even see the Daredevil movies, you know? Wasn't there the Daredevil movie with, I think, Ben Affleck? I think it was. I didn't even see the Daredevil film. So I just feel like I'd have to really get back into it, you know, in order to start watching the television show. Speaking of run-ins, we have a run-in here from Don Tony. Look at this. Don Tony, there it is. There's the Vince McMahon. Watch for the gulp. That's the look when your wife just lost her second campaign and you've lost $100 million. Poor guy. But Don Tony coming in and dropping a $50 super chat. Holy shit. DT, what's going on? Shout out to Don Tony. You can check out his channel. He's got a lot going on over there, a lot of content. He's opening up the forbidden door for everybody now. A lot of things going on over on the Don Tony YouTube channel. He says, let's go Mets. Hope all is well with you, brother. All the best. Well, same to you, my friend. I appreciate that very much. And I'll tell you one thing. I wish I was watching the Mets game tonight as opposed to watching that SmackDown show. But yes, let's go Mets indeed. We are a Mets zone here on this show tonight, not the Yankees. I saw what those Yankees fans did, by the way, in the game the other day, throwing bottles and shit at people in the outfield. You would never see a Mets fan doing that. A Mets fan would never behave in such a way. Even Don Tony knows that. But thank you. I appreciate that very much. It's very kind of you. We got a lot of Daredevil. A lot of Daredevil fans in the chat. All right, you know what? I tell you what, I may have to add that to my list. You've convinced me. I might just have to add that to my list since so many people are raving about it here in the chat from what I can see. Yeah, the Mets thing is cool. You know, just to go back to what Don Tony said, and I mentioned this earlier when I brought up the no-hitter. You know, it was a combined no-hitter. but only the second time that's happened in Mets history. And so, which is kind of amazing if you think about the history of the franchise and how far back it extends. So when you have something like that happen, it's a big deal. You know, it's a big deal. You got to celebrate that. That doesn't happen every day. And the Mets right now are hot, man. The Mets are doing well. They're kicking ass. It's still April. I keep telling myself, hey, dum-dum, it's only April. We've been through this before. Wait until June. Wait until July, and we'll see what happens then. But I am hopeful that they'll be able to continue the momentum. I hope so. What else can you do, right? That's all you can do is just hope. That's the Mets slogan. You got to believe. Food Hive. Daredevil was an amazing show. I highly recommend it. I'm not even a Marvel fan, and that show was incredible. John Bernthal as the Punisher. John Bernthal is, is it brother-in-law, right? Brother-in-law with Kurt Angle? I just watched the entire podcast about a month ago. He had Kurt Angle. They were on his back porch, I think, and he was just sitting around. They did like an hour-long podcast interview. It was great. Yeah, well, Bernthal was in the first couple of seasons of The Walking Dead. That was the first time I had seen him. He was on a television show, though. Another television show. Was it... maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. No. You know what I'm thinking of? you know what I'm thinking of? I actually just got him mixed up with Michael Richards and the role that Michael Richards had in Problem Child. For some reason, I thought that was John Bernthal. John Bernthal, I don't even know if he was acting back then. My God, Problem Child goes back to the early 90s. What the fuck am I thinking of? For some reason, I just got the two of them confused. Yeah, it's hard to predict. You know, 96 wins for the Mets. Why not 100? Why not go for the triple digits? Why limit yourself? Yeah, hopefully DeGrom, that's right, DeGrom will be back soon, hopefully, so. I always worry about that. With the Mets, my God, with their history of injuries, this club is completely snake-bitten. You get everybody healthy, I would be amazed. Injuries have always been an issue for this team. Lakers Pat says, bigger crowd, CYN, Impact, or Midnight Bingo? I would say, hey, look, Midnight Bingo, you'd be surprised how popular Bingo is. I'm going to say Midnight Bingo. And Steven Escalante Gonzalez, the month the Mets should get hot is around September. That would be nice if that was around the time they really got hot was September. I still have flashbacks to that September where they, I think they lost 7 of their last 17 or something and they missed the postseason. I still haven't forgotten about that. Food Hive says, Problem Child equals Bratty Sala Monster. People love that super chat. There are people who are new to the channel that when that super chat triggers, they're like, who is this kid acting like a complete douchebag? They don't realize that it's me. I'm like, no, that's me. It's not some random child in that super chat. Speaking of Kurt Angle, actually, before we wrap up here, I did want to bring this up. As I continue to play 2K22, I was going through the different characters, you know, and I've unlocked a lot of them at this point. You know, Brett and Diesel and Razor and Austin and Rock and Warrior and Hogan and Savage and all them. No Shawn Michaels, who, my understanding is, I think you unlock Shawn Michaels by playing Showcase mode. So I might be jumping into Showcase mode soon. Is Kurt Angle not in the game? I would find it very hard to believe that he's not in the game. I had saw something that he couldn't reach a deal with WWE or something about being in the game, but he's got to be in the game somewhere, right? Or is it just community creations? I would be surprised if Kurt wasn't in the game. That would be I was looking for him. I wanted to play as Kurt Angle, and I couldn't find him anywhere. Yet they have fucking Papa Shango in the game. I'm scrolling through all these legends. And I'm seeing the Big Boss Man is in the game and Papa Shango is in the game. And I'm like, There's no Kurt Angle. We have Papa Shango and no Kurt Angle. What's going on here? Wow. So he's not in the game. That's crazy. That's pretty crazy. Very disappointing. Boomerang. All the Mets need is an elite bullpen and they'll get into the World Series. From your lips to God's ears. I hope that happens. Patrick, thank you for the five. Check out Outer Range on Amazon. Great cast with Josh Brolin. Reminds me of Twin Peaks or Lost, and that I have no idea where it is headed. Well, it's funny you say that, because I just brought that up on Wednesday, and I brought it up on the call-in show last night. I was singing its praises. I've watched the first four episodes. Robbie from Barstool mentioned something about the show on Twitter, and I had never heard of it before. And I immediately went to look it up, and I saw the description. I said, this sounds like it's right up my alley. So I watched the first episode, and I loved it. I'm already four episodes deep, so I agree. I endorse Patrick's Super Chat. Outer Range. Anything with Josh Brolin is probably going to be a win. I am enjoying the show so far. They have Umaga coming as a DLC. So we're getting Umaga, but we're not getting Kurt Angle. What's going on here? Don't tell me JBL is in the game, but not Kurt Angle. Come on. You're going to tell me JBL is in the game somewhere, but not Kurt Angle? All right, guys, I'm going to let you guys go. This has been fun hanging out and talking movies and shows and video games and all the stuff that we actually find interesting. Unlike SmackDown tonight, which was not a very fun show. Hopefully, a little bit better next week for the go-home show. We do have one more week until the pay-per-view, and so we will talk more about WrestleMania Backlash as we get a little bit closer. Let me just flash the poll results one last time here. This is the Rampage poll, which has gotten 66% of you to give it a thumbs up, and only 14% thumbs down. Over on the SmackDown side, well, there you go. You can see the difference between the two. 16% thumbs up, 59.4% thumbs down. That right there tells you everything you need to know. Everything you need to know about SmackDown tonight. Hey, let's show Butch one more time. Where's Butch? Where's Butch? Butch is on his way to AEW Dynamite. There he is. You want to know where Butch is? Butch signed a contract last year with this company to stick around. So Butch has nobody to blame but himself if Butch is not happy. Butch sealed his own fate when he signed that contract. So I don't know why he's got such a sour puss on his face. But there he is. There's Butch. All right, I'm going to get out of here. Have yourselves a fantastic weekend. Thank you to everybody for all your super chats. DT, again, thank you for the 50 spot. Much love to you, my friend, and I will see you guys live again on Wednesday. That'll be the AEW Dynamite stream, and of course on Sunday, we will talk about all of the NXT releases. I have a lot to say about the Ember Moon interview with Chris Van Vliet, which is a very good interview, and I encourage you all to watch it. Don't just read the transcript of this one. It's a little over an hour long. Watch the interview itself. It's a very good interview, and you cannot get the full feel for what she was saying and the emotion that she was displaying unless you actually watch the interview itself. So I would encourage you to take the time to go watch that. And we'll talk about that on episode 754 on Sunday as well. So be well, stay safe, and I'll see you guys right back here Wednesday for the Dynamite stream. Take care, guys.
Your business depends on protecting your sensitive data. But your data is everywhere, distributed across the web, cloud applications, and infrastructure. At a time when users and data have never been more mobile, securing them has never been more complex. Introducing Sky High Security. We extend security beyond data access to data use, no matter where it is. Protecting your data anywhere you do business. Sky High Security.